Welcome to Box Office Battles with Greg and Eric, Season 2. Tonight we have the final four of the movie bands category. Who will win? We don't know. We're also going to talk about our next category, the worst Marvel movies ever. So sit back, relax, and enjoy Box Office Battles.
I'm Chili Dilly, the personality pickle.
Hi, I'm Greg, and I'm a nerd.
You must be kidding, aren't you?
I have never seen anything like this.
The worst part has been watching the actual watching of the movie.
Some of these were pretty terrible.
And we are back for another episode of Box Office Battles with Greg and Eric. This time we are at the final four of movie bands. We've got, this is what it looks like right now. We're down to the last four movies in this category. It's been fun. It's been real. I don't know if it's been real fun, but it's been pretty good. We got a silent. This is Silent Tap.
Silent Night.
We've got This Is Spinal Tap going up against The Commitments in one bracket. And in the other regional final, if you will, we have the Blues Brothers going up against Almost Famous. Eric is here with me.
And not happily. Did you notice on the bracket just now that the top seed won every one of those? I think that's the first bracket we've had where the 1, 2, 3, and 4 all made it through.
I would agree with you. I think you're right. I think that's very rare for us. We're usually we think outside the box. We pick something that we find exceptionally well, but this one, the ones that were high on IMDb, we picked. Now, you didn't care for Blues Brothers.
Did I not ever?
Did you not ever? Most famously did not care for Blues Brothers, but it's okay.
This is going to be the new Beetlejuice, it feels like. People will be talking about this forever.
I don't think you hated it, though, like Beetlejuice. You
just didn't get it.
Yeah, I think you got it for why people like it. I just think it didn't appeal to you.
I would for sure watch it again. Well, we can talk about it whenever.
Yeah, we will.
Whenever we talk about it.
I will say this. We had the votes up on the Facebook page for this, and we had, I forget how much I said, 167
votes.
I think it was 167. I'll have to double check here real quick. But it was 167, and yeah, 167 total. 20 comments. So thanks everybody who put in a comment on our Facebook page. A lot of people were very vocal about the Blues Brothers. So depending on how the voting goes, Blues Brothers could walk away with this one. I'm not saying won't.
Were people talking shit?
People were talking about that's the GOAT. That's the one out of these four.
No, that were they talking win. Shit about me?
No. They were just expressing their opinion on which of these should win.
I don't care about their opinion. I want to know whose ass I need to bust. Greg.
I didn't stir anything up. I did not advertise one way or the other. I gave the fans an option and they chose away. So yeah, that's the most votes we've gotten on any one of these episodes. So thank you for everybody who put in a vote on our Facebook page. We appreciate it and helping us to determine who's going to win tonight. I do want to say before we get going that this is Box Office Battles with Greg and Eric. We don't have a sponsor. We sponsor ourselves. I am Greg, and I consider myself a very nice guy. And I also think the world of Eric, so I'd like to sponsor him as well. If you'd like to sponsor Eric for less than a cup.
For 5 cents a day, less than a cup of coffee, you could feed me and send me a backpack filled with school stuff. I thought, no, that's
for
that's
dogs.
The pets with.
Yeah, it is.
Paralyzed vets or whatever.
That's the first thing I could think of was Sarah McLachlan. So if you want to sponsor this lovely hound, Eric, all you have to do is email us at boxofficebattles@gmail.com.
Are we still getting a bunch of like Romanian spam?
We got another one this week. It's great. I love it. It is that Romanian spam. I don't know where they're coming from. It's just people like hey, you guys have made it to season 2. You have more episodes than most starting podcasts get off to. You know what you need is a marketing firm that can help you reach. And I'm like, yeah, that's great, but I'm not spending money for something that we're doing out of love and we just want to enjoy and we like interacting grassroots wise. Plus, it's a scam, so it's okay. But
besides the scam part, it also sounds terrible.
Back to the business portion, though. Like I said, you can email us other than if you want us to be marketed by you. If you just want to make a comment on the show, you can vote that way on your category. You can suggest categories to us. That's at boxofficebattles@gmail.com. I can't stop hitting my microphone.
Why do you?
It's right.
You
here.
Did that last week or 2 weeks ago. Boom.
My hands are just everywhere. I can't control
out of
my
your hands. Face.
I'm like Ricky
what
Bobby.
Are you
I don't know. I am drinking Lipton Zero Sugar Green Tea, pineapple mango.
Good God.
It's pineapply delicious.
No, that's too many descriptors for. Too many adjectives.
It could be our sponsor.
Mango, pineapple, sugar-free.
Yeah, zero sugar. Lipton. Immune support.
No.
Immune no. support. It supports my immune system.
Immune support. Immune schmort no. is what I always say. So.
I like being immune to a lot of things. But one thing I'm not immune to is the love of cinema. So again, if you're here with us, make sure you follow us on our YouTube channel at Box Office Battle Podcast or on Twitch at Box Office Battle Pod, or you can go to our Facebook page, which is basically Box Office Battles with Greg and Eric. That's where the majority of the votes came this week. Michael Leblanowitz is out there, and he said he would sponsor himself. Mike Leblanowitz, I have discussed with him, and he is going to take part in our next category. Mike is a longtime supporter of the show. He's here just about every week commenting on the show and in the chat, and we thank him for his support. And as a result, we've decided to bring him on as a guest spot and let him talk about movies with us. So, that's what happens, kids. You support this show. You never know what might happen. You too might get on a very underperforming YouTube channel and talk about movies with us.
Well, I hope you two bitches are happy with each other.
He can never replace you, Eric. He can only outperform you and be better, but he can never replace
you. Can't replace, yeah. You said we decided that. We didn't decide shit. You did.
We apparently. Did together. We talked
no,
about it.
Oh, I said no. I was firmly on record.
You did.
First of all, you said Mike Florida, and I said who? What are you talking about? And you're like, the little guy, you know, he's like, he talks all the time in the chat. And I was like, what are you talking about? Like, this is a podcast. What are you talking about? Chats and
yeah,
GPTs and whatever.
Nice.
Like, I'm not part of it.
Yeah,
no, having Mike on will be awesome.
Yes.
I guess, unless he's terrible.
We are going to, tonight, we're going to discuss what movies are out there, and Mike's going to take his pick, whether he does the Final Four or just one of the battles. We're going to do that at the end of this show, once we determine who our winner of the movie bands category is tonight. We are going to reveal what our 8 movies are for the next category, which is going to be worst movie, Marvel movie ever. So we're going back to bad films, and they're painful, dude. It's going to be like when we did the bad films last year. I think these are atrocious, but we were in this for the long haul. So are we going to
end up like pigeonholing ourselves into like the way these character actors do, where all of a sudden our show is just, we just have to watch bad movies because that's what people expect of us. And it's the only thing we can do right. And it's the only thing we're ever going to be good at in our whole stinking fucking miserable lives.
I think we do both sides very well. So it's nice. I think when we had so much fun. I thought we had fun. They were bad movies and they hurt to watch, but I think we had a lot of fun discussing them when we did. So we'd like to do this category again. And then who knows, maybe in the future, we'll put all the winner of the losers, I guess you would say, of the worst movies up against each other to determine what is the ultimate worst movie. But this one coming up will be worst Marvel movies ever. But until we get there, we're going to have to decide who wins out of these movie bands. And like I said earlier, we have Spinal Tap versus Commitments, and then we have Almost Famous versus The Blues Brothers. So we're going to get right into it with the the commitments versus This Is Spinal Tap. Starting off the commitments, we just discussed this movie last week. Great film. You know, it's something that a lot of people. I'm surprised a lot of people don't know this film as well. I think it maybe it's because it's Irish based, but and it's from the early 90s, late 80s, early 90s. So it makes.
What does that got to do with anything?
Well, I think that, you know, that today we're so into, unless it's something that was like iconic, like Ghostbusters or anything like that, people don't know every movie that was made in the late 80s, early 90s. I just don't think it's gotten the attention.
Okay, when you say deserve. The 90s, you mean 15 years ago, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Because as it seems I sit like. Here and go, 30 fucking years ago?
Yeah, that's what it seems like. Yeah. It's a great film. It's about a guy who puts together a Irish band to sing soul in Dublin to the masses. It's really, really funny. And I think that we both, you know, like you hadn't seen it. It's one that's on my constant reviewing, you know, viewing rotation. So I think that when we talked about it, there's a lot of love for it there. So it did, for our minds, it won very easily last week.
Yeah. And it opened my eyes that I have a entirely new genre of favorite films, which is Irish people start a band movies, because we watched another one. I think it lost to Spinal Pap.
It did.
But what was the name of that other one?
Sing Street.
Sing Street. Film. And those were both great. And maybe I'm just a sucker for that type of movie. This one was better than Sing Street for a lot of reasons. And you know, it's interesting because we liked that one for the soul music. The Blues Brothers, which we'll get into later, you know, really soul-based. And maybe that has something to do with it for you and I because we like that style of music. I grew up listening to Fats Domino and Chubby Checker and, you know, the Penguins and the Vandellas and just all of those tunes. So watching a bunch of Irish people put together a band, and their accents, Greg, are so cute because they talk like they're from Australia, but they're not. You know what I mean? They're like, "Good day, mate. Let's start a soul band."
That's like a mishmash.
That's a good idea, isn't it? The accents are good. The movies are good. We like the storytelling. Sports and music, I think, just have these underlying universal themes and appeals and are really good vehicles for getting the point across. And Sing Street was really, not Sing Street.
The Commitments.
The Commitments, yeah, was a good example in that.
I agree. I think with movies about music and sports, you make a good point. It's that rags to riches or that coming from usually a blue collar background, usually from humble beginnings and rising to fame and fortune and stardom. And when you get watching these movies, and that's why the formula is almost identical. We got this new Michael Jackson movie coming out and it's the same thing, you know, and it might be a good film. I'm not saying it's going to be, but I'm just saying it is the same formula where you get invested in the rise and you start hoping for the inevitable breakout success of this group that you're watching. What The Commitments does better, in my opinion, is they stay grounded in reality. They never like they slowly build to that possibility that they might become recording stars. It's more of the fact that they're just trying to go from gig to gig and make any kind of money. And it's about the struggle of wanting to do a band, you know, with as a career, but not being able to pay your freaking bills. I mean, they lose their original drummer. He can't do it. He hates the singer. It's too much. The piano players and everybody just starts to fracture because as much as they love the band, life gets in the way when you want to try to chase your dreams. And I think that's why The Commitments resound so hard. And it's funny too. It's one of those things like when it gets any type of emotion, it follows it up with some sort of quick joke. And usually they're very, you know, they're very conversational based jokes, and it just carries the film. So if we're going to compare it to Spinal Tap, it's like one is a flat out comedy. It's a mockumentary about a fake band and the other one is not. It's a drama comedy about the rise. I think we got to look at, are there any cons to the commitments that would cause them to lose to Spinal Tap? What do they do wrong? Can we find any fault with it?
Well, I don't. We had this issue with our very first bracket when The Godfather went up against Singing in the Rain, and we said the only problem with Singing in the Rain in this matchup is that it's not The Godfather.
That's a good right? point.
I'm finding it difficult to separate out a couple of things here when it comes to Spinal Tap. Spinal Tap as a movie versus Spinal Tap as a trailblazing kind of first of its kind or first biggest of its kind.
Right.
Spinal Tap as a movie versus Spinal Tap as a reputation. And then the last thing is Spinal Tap as a movie in and of itself created by Christopher Guest and Harry Shearer and Michael McKean. And all of the other Christopher Guest movies that I really, really like Waiting for Guffman is my favorite one. Best in Show is great. I liked A Mighty Wind as much as most people probably did. And so I think it's really hard with when a movie is this big, the cultural zeitgeist that Spinal Tap is, that maybe, and I don't know, but maybe my son Eller, who's 11, if I said to him, this one goes to 11, he may get that reference. Yeah. He may not know it's from Spinal Tap, but he may get that reference. That movie's so big that it almost feels like it's just going to swallow up the other movie because yeah. it's just that grand.
It was one of the first movies we watched. It was the first movie we watched in this bracket, and so it's been a while since we've watched Spinal Tap, but I've watched both of these movies, Commitments and Spinal Tap, quite a few times, and the difference for me between the two is the Commitments is one of those films that I literally will put on if I'm just relaxing and I want a funny, lighthearted but really good musical performance type film. Spinal Tap I put on if I'm just feeling goofy. It's like when we watched The Lonely Island and Popstar, which is also a mockumentary. It's if I'm feeling like I want to laugh, like just laugh and then have some mock metal thrown in there, I will put that on. So they're both very similar in that vein, but the one thing is that what the Commitments brings is a little bit more heart that we don't get in Spinal Tap. I don't know if that makes it a better film. It depends on what you're looking for.
Well, yeah, it's hard to compare really kind of just drastic differences in tone here, just like you're describing. You know, one's meant to be, they're both funny. One's meant to be over the top and kind of a series of vignettes that kind of lead, you know, through the life, the daily life, the rise and fall of Spinal Tap as a band. The Commitments is really funny, but more in, like you said earlier, in like witty banter conversation kind of way. And that's really good writing too, because it's, from what I understand, when people start to try to write dialogue, it's really hard to write dialogue the way people would say it as opposed to how you would write it down. And there's always going to be this natural tendency because you're writing for it to sound like writing. So to do that really, really well, and for the actors to pull off that script the way that they did, I don't feel like, okay, so I will say this as I think about it. I didn't find a single part of the Commitments that felt forced to me. Mm. Like, and I mean, I must say, I think Spinal Tap falls into that a little bit where you just throw all of your jokes against the wall and see which ones stick for you and which ones don't. And maybe that's worth doing because certain people will find certain things funny. Other people will find other things funny. So we all think this movie is funny, even if we think it for different reasons if your funny moments are different than mine. But I will say, you know, as I was creating that thought, that custom thought, the thought you will only hear right here on Box Office Battles with Eric and Greg.
I guess we're changing it now. So
that's Greg and Eric. You know, I mean, is that making any sense? How's that landing for you?
No, I hear you. That the thing about the commitments, it is an extremely well-written, well-acted, extremely well-performed film by pretty much a bunch of amateurs. And it's amazing that they pull that off. You know, now Alan Parker is an accomplished director and he does a fabulous job. I think that it doesn't have the reputation of, and I'll say this right off the bat, we got 167 votes in and it did not get very many of those. And I think part of that, when I looked at commitments not getting any votes, I'm like, I think it's number one, you can only vote for one. And it was the fact that these other movies are so iconic. And when you've got a movie like The Commitments, I love it. And I honestly, comparing the two, if you were to say, like, one of the things that we do on this show is we say, if you could only watch one of these for the rest of your life or whatever, or if you had to just pick one to watch, you could not watch the other one, which one would that be? It would be a very big struggle. If I put both these movies on the scale, they would be almost even, because I could not give up This Is Spinal Tap at all for The Commitments and vice versa. So if that kind of thinking, which I've never been able to do on this show, normally I have a clear idea in my head which one I couldn't do without. I can't do with it here. So when we're trying to come up with the winner between these two excellent films, for me, it's like, where do we go with the reputation of this film? And you brought that up. Spinal Tap is iconic. It did something that, yeah, the Ruddles, All You Need Is Cash, may have originated, and other sketch comedy shows might have done mockumentaries about bands, but this was the first, like, became mainstream on a very low budget type of mockumentary film about a heavy metal band. Some people thought this was a real band, even though, you know, you have Lenny from Lenny and Squiggy, Michael McKeon, on there, and nobody recognizes him from Laverne and Shirley, and Saturday Night Live. So it's one of those things where people thought that it was real. It has this just lore of it. And I will say this, I love it to death, but I know people who can't stand it. Now, really? There's not many, but I've brought it up, you know, like you'll bring up This Goes to 11, like we'll be at a group, you know, party or whatever. And everybody, you know, that's a joke that everybody does. This Goes to 11. And somebody in the group, and it's that guy or that girl that goes, I hate that movie. And then they will give you explicit reasons, and they just don't get it, because they don't realize it's just a pure comedy and it's satire of the music industry as a whole.
I don't think that you get to decide whether or not they get it or not just because they don't like a movie you like.
That's true. You know what? I will accept what you just said with aplomb. I won't fight it because I do that all the time. I get very irritated when somebody on the social medias says something about a film and somebody immediately goes negative with it and says the reason you didn't like it is because you didn't understand it or you're not smart enough. So let me retract. I will backtrack on that. I won't say they don't get it. I would say that it's just not their type of humor.
That is fair. That is absolutely fair.
It doesn't appeal to them. So, and that's true for all of us. What did we have here? We got Claude Debussy 69 says, Eric doesn't like Beetlejuice because he doesn't get it. Good one. It's the truth.
There's nothing to fucking get. That movie's so stupid.
That's the exception to the rule. Eric does not get Beetlejuice, but everybody else.
That's a real thinker of a movie that I just really couldn't wrap my head around because I'm so simple-minded. How does the world work, Greg? It's just dumb fucking luck that I got to this point in my life, 48 fucking years old. I've got a good job. Whatever else, you know, is going right in my life. you know, among all the things that are not.
Yeah.
But, oh, yeah, it's because I didn't fucking get it. I'm just too stupid. Fucking ridiculous Claude de Pussy.
Sorry about that. I'm with you. I get it. I do get Beetlejuice. I get the appeal. But we're talking about Spinal Tap. And, yeah, so I know people that dislike it for any reasons where they just don't find it funny. And that's fine. I know people that probably wouldn't be able to sit through the commitments either because they can't understand the Irish accents or maybe the music's not to their taste. Every movie's for everybody. And so our job tonight on this show is to kind of pick a winner between these two, I think, really exceptional films. You know, one is they're different in tone, but they both did a lot as far as musically, and they're both extremely enjoyable.
We have to find a way to make people prove they've seen all the movies before they vote for some shit, because if you've not seen The Commitments, then you don't know. You don't know. And should be voting for it or not.
We can't force our audience to vote. They pick their favorite.
Yes, we
can. We can't force them to watch it to vote. They have to pick their favorite. And obviously, the ones who voted for Spinal Tap have seen it. So we just have to go with that and hope that they know. We have to
I understand that. That's what I'm saying. Is that three of these movies are very big, popular movies that people are going to go, oh, yeah, I liked Almost Famous. Click. And they're going to see The Commitments on there and go, what's never that? Heard of it.
And so they only can pick one. So obviously that people love one more than the others. So, and that's obvious. So let's go ahead and pick this one out. We've already discussed these in the other brackets. We know if you want, I will go first on this one.
Yeah.
And then I will let you go and we will.
Oh yeah. I'll for sure go first on this next one.
I know. Cause I know what you're going to pick on the next one. So anyway, for this one, as much as I love, and I love The Commitments, as much as I love The Commitments, I was thinking about it today. What am I going to pick? And I just have to go with Spinal Tap for the reason of its place in cinematic history, what it's done for the mockumentary, how it launched Christopher Guest's career. The band itself is iconic. I have, you know, all three albums on vinyl. They're all good. They're just it's just a fun creation. And as much as I love The Commitments, I'm going to have to give my vote to Spinal Tap on this one.
Yeah. So I kind of did the same thing, started thinking about how I was going to vote for this one. Or really, honestly, how I was going to vote for The Commitments on just kind of generally and trying to find a way to make it happen. And I think I just kind of kept going back to, I have watched This Is Spinal Tap so many times, starting when I had an apartment with my brother when I was 19, maybe, probably the first time I saw it, and have watched it several times since. I have learned to play Give Me Some Money on my guitar.
Nice.
I used to perform that with the band when we were just kind of bullshitting, you know, as one of our throwaway fun songs. I want to separate Spinal Tap as a work in and of itself from everything that Christopher Guest has gone on to do. But at the same time, it's like coming out with your biggest thing first. And, you know, I appreciate a lot of the stuff that he's done after. But just creating an actual style, creating an actual like subset of movies, basically on your own. Because if you ask people, what's the first music mockumentary you can think of? They're not going to say the Rudels.
No.
They're going to say this.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, for all of those reasons, and not just its reputation, and I hate it. Maybe I should just vote for The Commitments because we already know Spinal Tap's going to win. But that's not the point of the show, is to be contrary. The point of the show is to pick the one that I think is the better movie. And I fuck, Greg. I say all that,
And you've only watched.
I enjoyed the commitments. Yeah. I enjoyed watching the commitments more than I enjoyed watching Spinal Tap this time. But I've seen Spinal Tap a bunch of times.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I know what jokes are coming. I know what parts get slow and what parts I should pay attention to and what parts kind of drag for me and I don't care for.
Right.
So if I think about the first time I saw, then if there I think about the first time I saw Spinal Tap or the second time when I started to catch on to some of the jokes.
Right. That's a good point.
Okay. Well, then in that case, I can feel a little better going. My vote is also for Spinal Tap for this one.
That's good.
Okay. I'm glad I was able to talk myself into it.
When you said that you just watched the commits, the first thing I thought was, yeah, but when I watched Spinal Tap the first time, I remember when they did Listen to What the Flower People Say and how I could not stop laughing. Like, belly hurt when the psychedelic little camera started to rotate.
To what the flower.
I was losing my mind. The scene, I remember the first time I saw this, the Hello Cleveland scene where they're underneath the stage and they're walking around and the maintenance guy points them in the direction and they walk around. And when the camera pans and the same maintenance guy is standing there, I couldn't breathe. I remember that kind of thing. Now, yeah, I've watched it a ton of times since. So maybe that's why it's even close in our minds. But if we go back to the first time of Spinal Tap, there is no question. It is a goat. It is an amazing film. So yeah, so we're gonna go ahead and declare Spinal Tap into the finals over the Commitments. Sadly, I love the Commitments. It for what it did, they have their honor. They have their honor. But now we have to talk about the other matchup, which we just mentioned, which is Almost Famous versus Eric's favorite film of the brackets, The Blues Brothers. So we have The Blues Brothers. Again, two totally different films. Music-based, this whole genre was music. But it's going to be a tough one for us because we already know who Eric's going to vote for. Will Greg vote for Almost Famous, The Blues Brothers?
No, you won't. You're going to vote for Blues Brothers. I already know it. All right. Because if I was going to...
Let's talk about it.
With our next set, I'm going to start sending in a video that you're not allowed to watch where I pretend to be you and be so highbrow about fucking everything.
And I already said that I get to be you and I go, Beetlejuice.
This is stupid. This is so stupid. I didn't get it. Explain to me, Greg, why don't I get this?
Yeah.
I don't know why I'm making up a voice for my own voice. But
you know yourself so well.
I'm just stomping around.
I honestly, though, I don't know what I'm voting for. I've been thinking a lot about this, and I haven't really made a decision yet.
Are you just going to build tension?
No, it's the truth.
You're just going to, all right, I guess it was Blues Brothers all along. So this is another set of movies where I think one is really narrative, one is really, story driven as an arc, as a character arc, as a story arc, and it's not The Blues Brothers. It's Almost Famous in the same way that The Commitments was the more narrative focused of the first two movies. And then much in the same way that Spinal Tap is, Blues Brothers, at least to me, felt like a series of vignettes that were to highlight the musical numbers, which is fine. Spinal Tap does that too. Big Bottoms talk about mud flaps.
Yeah.
Again, we're kind of comparing apples and oranges. You're taking what already was established sketch comedy of the Blues Brothers, incorporating some of the best musical numbers you'll ever see put to film. Right?
Oh, I agree.
In the church with James Brown, the guy jumping, super high and doing flips. For me, it's the Ray Charles, but for me, it's always going to be Ray Charles. He's a top five voice. I mean, his album, Modern Sounds and Country Music.
Oh, yeah. Great.
I mean, got chills just saying the name of the album because that thing... I mean, if you can't find joy listening to that album, I don't know where you're going to find it in this fucking cruel.
Here We Go Again is one of my favorite tunes. It's amazing, amazing song.
Yep. And so I get that. You know, that's an equivalency that we just saw with Spinal Tap. And Almost Famous just really leans into Cameron Crowe's storytelling ability. And that, I mean, in and of itself, I think we agreed on that episode that he creates such a tapestry of layers of what interpersonal dynamics look like when your hopes and dreams do align with someone else's, and then when they don't, and when everything you worked for works out, and when everything you worked for doesn't work out. And I mean, there's so many layers to this onion to peel back in Almost Famous. Every time I watch it, I'll catch some new look, some new small off-the-cuff statement that really gives an insight into what the character's feeling or thinking at the time. You mentioned in that show, I remember, the look that Kate Hudson's character, just one of the looks that she gives, and I forget which scene you're describing, but that it hit you like a ton of bricks.
It was the one where you know, he confesses to her that the band has been gambling her away. Yes. When she's infatuated, she's in love with the lead singer, and she's trying to laugh it off, but a single tear rolls down her face.
Yeah.
And it's just that moment where it doesn't, like you said, with the narrative, they don't have to hold your hand and explain. You get it through the emotion. You get it through everything that goes on. I saw a recent article about Almost Famous, and it just cracks me up, and it makes me a little mad too. This movie I saw, you know, in early 2000 when it came out, I was in the Air Force at the time, and I was on a temporary duty assignment looking for something to kill time and do, and I just saw it. I saw the poster, and I'm like a big fan of 70s rock, so I went in and just saw it by myself, and it blew me away. And it is an exceptional film from a narrative standpoint, and it tells an emotional, gripping story about coming of age. And I saw this piece of shit hit piece, new article, brand new, like came out this year. Maybe we need to rethink the morals of Almost Famous.
Because give me a fucking break.
And it had to bring up the Band-Aids and their relationship to the singers, how it disempowered women. The rape scene to them where, you know, William Miller gets accosted by the women.
Are these people watching the same movie exactly that we are?
Well, through their eyes. And this is a different generation that's experiencing this film that can't relate to the environment. I'm not saying they don't get it. I'm saying they don't relate to the environment in which the original stories were told, or Cameron Crowe's life, because it's based on a lot of real events. They're looking
back.
He's
not glorifying it. If anything, yeah, he's showing the gritty, horrible underbelly of what we, the hoi polloi, see as this shining to be a rock star, to be a celebrity, and all that entails and all that goes with it. And if anything, he's showing that from interpersonal dynamics to, you know, the groupie Band-Aid stuff to drug use to whatever it is, that like that stuff will take a toll on you.
Yeah.
And that's a ridiculous article. I mean, I haven't read it. Send me the article.
I will. I don't know if
I feel like getting that mad over something.
I saw the headline, and we had just covered the movie recently, and I'm like, they better not. And it's what we do these days, is we take something from the 70s, 80s, and 90s, especially 90s and 2000s lately, and we deconstruct it because the current, I won't say the current generation, but the current people that are in media, the current people that are writing these things, feel an obligation to make sure that we don't honor those things, that we make sure we call them out for misogyny and
it's okay.
Yeah.
If you feel like today as a society, that we are more enlightened and that we don't let things slide like we used to. Right. And whether you agree with that statement or not, doesn't fucking matter to me.
Yeah.
Y'all can write in if you want. I don't read this shit. So you can think that we're more enlightened now than we ever were. You can think we weren't.
Yeah.
But this story is set in 1970, whatever.
Four.
And it's like me saying, I can't watch Gone with the Wind because there's aspects of slavery in it. And like to act like slavery didn't exist in, you know, the Civil War era is that's such a reductive take. And it makes me mad just hearing about it.
Yeah. And so that galvanized me as far as my love for the movie to begin with. And so I don't want to go down that road of we can have that conversation, though, as far as like, you know, destroying icons or memories of the past because of the context in which they took place. But in Almost Famous, you can't do that because this is rooted in a lot of real stories. This is Cameron Crowe's freaking life, for crying out loud. And it's well told. And if you grew up in the 70s like I did, I'm a little bit younger than Cameron Crowe, but I can relate to a lot of those, that environment. I grew up with five brothers and sisters, all played, you know, rock music, Journey, you know, and bands of that time. My brothers loved
rock music and Journey.
Yeah, no. Well, back then it was considered, but you know, like my Led Zeppelin was played on our house quite a bit. Pink Floyd, Jay Giles Band was a huge one because they were from Boston, but they played in Detroit a lot. So before Centerfold, like, must have got lost, Southside Shuffle, Jay Giles Band, Bob Seger. Anyway, it was what Kid I listened Rock. To. No, not Kid Rock. Bad Company, you know, bands like that. And, you know, Peter Frampton, who did some of the soundtrack on this album, you know, he's in there. And so that vibe, Allman Brothers Band was big, Lynyrd Skynyrd, that kind of thing. So, and I mentioned all of those because that was the music that I grew up as an environment in my house. So when I see a movie like this, which we don't see very often, it with that type of theme and that type of setting, it's refreshing. And you've got Lester Bangs, you know, played unbelievably well by Philip Seymour Hoffman, who commands the screen. You know, it's just, there's so many great performances in it, and the narrative is great. It's gripping. It is without a doubt one of my favorite films. And what I'm trying to reconcile is, as a quote-unquote movie reviewer or whatever, a movie podcast, and I grew up loving Blues Brothers, and I know that the love that this film has, can I vote for one of my other favorite films of all time over one that I hold very dear? And that's what I've been struggling with.
So I think there's a couple ways to look at it. I mean, first of all, I would say of the eight, well, we watched more than eight because we had a play-in bracket.
Right, yeah,
we
did.
Almost Famous is the best story out of all of them, right? Hands down. So you're talking about if we shuffle the cards and we rank them based just on their story, Almost Famous wins, in my opinion. I guess what I would ask you, because I'm dumb schmuck who watches movies and either gets them or doesn't, and either likes them or doesn't. You have kind of, because of your love for movies, because of your education in this realm, you must have a criteria that you kind of internally set that says when a movie does these things successfully, or when a movie checks these boxes successfully, I know that I'm watching a good movie. So I guess what I would ask you is, if you want to shed some light on maybe what your top two or three, you know, must-haves for what makes a successful movie, and which of these two movies checks more of those boxes for you, I'd be interested to hear that from you.
You know, it's interesting. I do talk about this a lot, and I don't want to belabor it too much, but one of the things I say to my wife whenever we watch anything is I find the overwhelming amount of movies today that have unlikable characters in them to be a constant no-no for me. When somebody is completely unlikable and that I deem not worthy of my interest, I'm usually turned off.
Like I also, both of the Blues Brothers.
Well, that's the thing. That's what's so funny. We talked about it at length when we discussed the Blues Brothers. I don't find them unlikable. And I think part of the reason is because they were a skit, so they're harmless. They never do any real harm. Yeah, they destroy a shopping mall. It's over the top ridiculous. But they really don't do any harm. They're just kind of bad boys, and that's the whole thing.
Sleaze balls.
Yeah, but they're in the context of when they came out, they were lovable
sleaze balls.
If you heard like some of their music, because I was listening to their music before the movie even came out, seeing them on Saturday Night Live, they did a remake of Rubber Biscuit. And hearing Dan Aykroyd do that, it's very funny. Hearing him do Hey Bartender and all these songs, it were Soul Man, which was a huge, huge hit for him before the movie. And it's one of those things you hear those, and they were great songs and a great band. And then you see the movie, and so you overlook it. You like them already because you already had this built-in love for them. And I think that may be where it wasn't as enjoyable for you because you didn't have that built-in love for the characters already. Then you couple that with all these musical numbers. The Blues Brothers is a very unconventional film in the fact that, like we've talked about, it goes from moment to moment. It's kind of a road film. It's kind of like a heist film or a old Western where we're getting the band back together and you collect the members one by one through these storylines, and then you make the journey to have the big concert, and then you run from the police to turn the money in, and then you do your job, and then you pay. They end up paying at the end. So as far as what makes a good film is, number one, I got to have likable characters. Number two, I love great dialogue. Cinematography is great. I don't care for moodiness. I don't care for a lot of downplayed dreariness in films. I like exceptional acting that can be dramatic, but I don't need environments to be moody. I would put more in like, say, did what you say in that film grip me and held my attention more than the scenery? Scenery can be great, but I want to be entertained by what you're trying to say.
Can you give me an example of a movie that stands out to you as moody for moody's sake?
Several, and my son might kill me for this. Most Christopher Nolan films. Now, people love Christopher Nolan. I do not dislike Christopher Nolan, but a couple of his films, Dunkirk in particular, which is a World War II film that I love movies like that. I find that to be very dreary. It is unfocused. There's no character development that is engaging to me. And it's just kind of a collection of stories that has this dark, cloudy dreariness about it. There's other films like that when they use a color palette that is muted. And I'm just like, okay, I get it, but it doesn't really work for me. When I talk about, I would rather have a movie with good dialogue. One of my favorite films, and it's not everybody's favorite, it's certainly not everybody's top 10, is Color of Money by Martin Scorsese with Paul Newman and Tom Cruise. I don't know why I love it more than most of the American public. I mean, it did well. It did fine, but it was the follow-up to Top Gun, and I think everybody wanted another Top Gun movie. And I went to see that movie, and if you just read the script, the dialogue is amazing. And the sets are just take place in pool halls, but there's an atmosphere of realism, and it could be gritty, not dour, not sour and dreary, but it's gritty and it can be fun. The characters are extremely likable as these con artists. They're trying to pull this pool hustle across the country, but it's just extremely well written. Scorsese, to me, and Sidney Lumet and others, directed and wrote some of the best dialogue that's ever been put on paper, that's ever been done. You know, and then we could bring up Tarantino as well. I think Tarantino can go overboard with his own self-grandizing with these really long monologues. But that being said, The Hateful Eight has some of the best monologue moments that I've ever seen. Inglourious Basterds has some of the best monologue type dialogue moments. So with these movies, you get more of that in Almost Famous than you do Blues Brothers, but that's for not sure. Blues Brothers film. When I look at Blues Brothers, it's kind of like, what do I look for in a really, really good comedy musical or just a comedy? And I look at things that have always brought me joy. You know, you got Ghostbusters and things like that. Beetlejuice. No, I'm just kidding. but things like that. And it is, to me, one of the top comedies. Even growing up, I always found it extremely funny. The music has always been great. So it's a really tough choice. So I think we need to vote, because we beat these two horses to death, and then we can declare our winner and put everybody out of their suspenseful misery. And I will let you go first on this. I still don't know who I'm going to vote for. I'm going to talk myself into one or the other.
Yeah, I won't go on a big soapbox again. I think I've said everything that I feel like I need to say for both of the films. I think Almost Famous is the better film about a band than Blues Brothers is a film about a band.
And yeah, I have a hard time with that, because the one thing that when I was talking about it with my wife today, she asked me, because she likes the Blues Brothers, but she didn't mince words. She loves Almost Famous. We watched it together, and she looked at me after it was over. She goes, "They didn't do anything wrong in that film. That was a near perfect film for her." She just was like,
"Listen to the lady."
I know. And she likes the Blues Brothers. But the one thing that she asked me, she said, "So out of all of these four acts, who plays their own music or does their own music?" And I'm like, the only one that really doesn't is Stillwater and Almost Famous. Spinal Tap, they're real musicians. Harry Shearer, not so much as Michael McKean and Christopher Guest, but the Commitments played a lot of their own music. And then they went on tour as a band. Spinal Tap went on tour as a band. The Blues Brothers went on tour as a band, and Stillwater didn't. Do I hold the movie as less about that band and more about Kate Hudson and William Miller? We had this discussion when we did Almost Famous, and at the time it was like, it's still the better movie, and that's ultimately what we're looking at. Which one is the better film in this category, and is Spinal Tap just edged out the Commitments? I am going to make a decision, and I'm going to side with you and go with Almost Famous.
Whoa!
I'm going to do it. I know that a lot of the people that voted may not like this because we, like I said, we had 167 votes come in on the Facebook page, and I want to say that an overwhelming amount of them were for the Blues Brothers. And I'm not going to give the totals right now, but I'll say how many the Blues Brothers did have. And it was 61.
Out of 167.
Yes. And four movies that people had to choose from.
Yeah. So got a third of the votes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I'm going to give it to Almost Famous. So that brings us to, who do we choose between Almost Famous and Spinal Tap?
Well, now we just fucked ourselves over because we created another matchup just like the two matchups we just had, where one is a thought experiment, think piece, and the other one's dick jokes, you know, cucumber in the pants going through an airport security.
Exactly. Right? Yep.
And that is so hard to reconcile. We've tried to do it twice now and find ourselves falling all over each other and changing the rules midstream because we don't like where our own arguments are heading. Like, as I'm saying something, I'm going, wait, but this is going the opposite of what I'm trying to say.
So the thing is yeah, exactly what you're saying pretty much just says to me, if I sat there and made the choice between Blues Brothers and Almost Famous, and I chose Almost Famous because of the reasons I gave, how can I choose Spinal Tap over Almost Famous? So let me put it more like this. Is if I would have picked Blues Brothers, which of the two would I picked between This Is Spinal Tap and Blues Brothers? And I love the Blues Brothers, but Spinal Tap, to me, I think it's what this category is about. It personifies this category. And while I actually think it is a more exceptionally made film than the Blues Brothers is cinematically great. It is so many cool things with the action, with all the different car chases. But what makes Spinal Tap such a viewing pleasure is the structure of them trying to recapture their old glory, and the just the breakdown of the band structure. And one of the things I'll say about that, Blues Brothers, when you watch the Blues Brothers, you know it's Dan Aykroyd and John Belushi. You know who the band are. You know who all the celebrity guest singers are. And the movie's actually greater because of those guest star singers. Whereas in Spinal Tap, like I said, people forgot that this wasn't a real group of musicians. People forgot that this is, and you can really, as you're watching it, instead of seeing Nigel, you see Nigel instead of Michael McKean. You see David St. Hubbins instead of Christopher Guest. And or the other way around, sorry. I named the wrong characters, but you get what I mean.
Yeah.
And it's, do you see Derek Smalls instead of Harry Shearer? I don't see Harry Shearer when I watch This Is Spinal Tap. I see those three guys. And that is a really great testament for the movie, is that you forget you're actually not watching a documentary sometimes.
Well, and you said it before, you've got three albums by these guys. Yep. And I could listen to those albums and find them enjoyable without knowing that there was a movie that these came from.
Right.
Because they do that tongue-in-cheek rock and roll in the same way that I think that first, well, I don't know if it was the first, but the big The Darkness album that came out with I Believe in a Thing Called Love.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And that album is amazing. That whole album is amazing. And that song is amazing, but it's amazing because it's over the top, tongue in cheek, like rock and roll for rock and roll's sake. Like the lifestyle can be excessive, but this music was excessive. And that's how I feel about Spinal Tap when I just listen to the songs.
Yeah.
And that's a talent too. I mean, we know that Christopher Guest and these guys are all really good musicians, and they've done it not just here, but they did it in A Mighty Wind. And it's not like this movie only features rock and roll songs. It's got some of your old, you know, skiffle, give me some money type things. And then it's got your 70s ballad, listen to what the flower people say. And, you know, again, I think when you've seen a movie 30 or 40 times, obviously you watched it that many times because you liked it a lot. But the shine does wear off of even a Ferrari if you drive it too often. And so I am trying my best to put myself in the mindset of the first or second time I saw Spinal Tap, and really the second or third, fourth time that I saw Almost Famous, because it's got some things that you'll miss upon first watch. And I don't know that I'm any closer. I'm just going to go ahead and vote.
Okay. I'll let you go first.
I don't want to talk myself in and out of something. Yep. And I think I feel confident that Spinal Tap is the, I mean, is it a better movie for what it wants to do? Yes. Because it is not trying to be Almost Famous. It's not fair to compare or hold it to the storytelling that Almost Famous is able to accomplish, because this was a journalist who wrote a movie about his experience as a journalist. Of course, it's going to hit all of the who, what, when, where, whys, and hows, and every layer of it. That's his job. It's his fucking job. But when Christopher Guest and these guys set out to make this movie, they made perfection. And I'm not going to hold that against them just because it doesn't have the same feel that Almost Famous has. I think that they had a vision, successfully executed on it, and have given us a movie that I've watched at least 30 or 40 times. And there's not a lot of movies that I can say that about.
And so you're going with Spinal Tap.
Spinal Pap.
So there, that being said, I watch a lot of movies. We know we've talked about this, and I've watched all four of these films quite a bit. These are four of my favorite music movies of all time. And so when I talk about how can I vote for Spinal Tap over Almost Famous, when I said I voted for Almost Famous because it was a better film, I think that Blues Brothers is a good film for what it does. I just think when it comes down to movie bands, the Blues Brothers had their little, you know, kind of level. The tribute to music that Almost Famous does is very close to Blues Brothers. It's just a different genre, but the tribute is still there. If you listen, I have the soundtrack of Almost Famous. If you pull up the songs, let me just pull this up. So just looking at the soundtrack for Almost Famous here, just on this one alone, you have Nancy Wilson in Uncle Trumbull. You have I'm Waiting for the Man by David Bowie. Love Comes Around by Stillwater. You have Cat Stevens, Clarence Carter, Free, Led Zeppelin, Elton John, you know, Stevie Wonder on the soundtrack. It's an incredible soundtrack that does justice to the 70s as well as the Blues Brothers does. So I want to put that out of the way. When I compare it to Spinal Tap, it's all about its place in cinematic history. Almost Famous might be my favorite of the two films, but you cannot deny Spinal Tap's cinematic, just legendary status from humble beginnings, where Christopher Guest came up with this idea and then of course went on to do so many others, but this is his masterpiece. This is just, he's the only one that he ever made a sequel to, which is a decent sequel, but this is, it's on a level on its own. There's so many things that I have good memories about, especially this goes to 11 and the, you know, we talked about it with Derek Smalls gets stuck inside the little pod, Stonehenge. These moments that they do, they're not just funny gags. Like Blues Brothers has really funny gags in it to me. Spinal Tap has bust-a-gut funny gags. Like when I first saw it, I could not stop laughing, and you would miss something for the sake of the next joke. And that's why I would say that very slightly, I love all, I got to say, to me, all four of these films are exceptional, and it's hard to choose between any of them. But going in, one of the reasons I wanted to do this category, and I wasn't sure if they were going to win at the time, one of the reasons I wanted to do the category was because of this film. It was the reason I decided, hey, let's do a category of movies like this is Spinal Tap. So how could I give the title to any other film when this, they were the reason this whole thing existed in the first place? So that all being said, I'm going to vote for Spinal Tap as well and declare it the winner of the movie bands battle. And it was the number one seed. It has such a huge IMDb rating. It is beloved. The fans hit the Facebook page, and they overwhelmingly voted for Spinal Tap. So it did not come down to a tiebreaker, but I do want to thank all the fans who voted. It was the number one voted movie overall, 80 votes out of the 167, which was crazy. And then Blues Brothers had around six. They were second, so... What were you going to say?
So that was 140 of our 160 votes.
Yeah, was Blues Brothers and Spinal Tap. And if I look at the rest here, let me take my glasses off so I can see it. 21 votes for Almost Famous and only 4 for The Commitments. So the and I got one angry emoji because That Thing You Do did not make the final 4. And I'm like, is this Eric? So
that's fair. Yeah, my undercover Facebook account.
Thanks, Mike, for acknowledging the category and everything and for being with us tonight. We want to thank everybody for being here for the movie bands category. And before we go, we're going to discuss the movies that we're going to do for the next category. I'm just making sure we got it set. That we're going to do coming up in 3 weeks. We're going to start a new category And last season we did the worst movies ever made, or a bunch of the worst movies ever made. And we had The Room by Tommy Wiseau went up against Battlefield Earth, two incredibly, incredibly bad and painful movies that we watched. So we decided to do that again for fun, like we talked about earlier. And so we are going to do it again, but this time we're going to do a subcategory of it where we talk about the worst Marvel movies ever made. And there's bad DC movies too. I was originally going to do just bad superhero movies. And then I looked at it and I went, God Lord, most of these are Marvel. How many of these are Marvel? Well, most of them are Marvel. So as many good Marvel movies as they've had some bad ones. So what we did is we took, I took about 30 of what was considered the kind of the weakest Marvel films, and I ranked them by IMDb and Rotten Tomatoes and by fans and another category too. And it, what I got was these eight movies. So these are the movies that we are going to have in the worst Marvel movie ever made. Number eight is X-Men Dark Phoenix. I had the displeasure of watching this. I don't even think I finished it. It was so bad. I think that I like the X-Men movies, and this one was a travesty. It was the last one they did. It killed the franchise. Jennifer Lawrence is in it. She basically sleepwalks through it. I guess I get to finish it is all I can say about that. So Dark Phoenix is number eight. Number seven is one I have not seen. I've been wanting to see this one, and I know I heard it's bad. This is Aaron Taylor Johnson in Kraven the Hunter is the Seven Seed, which is another Marvel film. They did a bunch of these movies that were takes on the Spider-Man universe because Sony was trying to keep their license to Spider-Man and not lose it to the regular Marvel Cinematic Universe that was being done with all of the better movies. So what they did was they cranked out a bunch of shit, and Kraven the Hunter is one of them. At number six, we have another one of those films, which is Jared Leto in Morbius. This one I have seen all the way through. It is laughably funny. This was a meme where people, we'll talk about it when we discuss it, where people were sarcastically building this movie up like it was great, and nobody understood that it was all sarcasm. And it was one of the best memes or campaigns that came out against a movie ever. This is going to be insane. So that's our number six, is Morbius with Jared Leto. Number five is Jennifer Garner in Elektra. This is a stinker of a movie. This came out when Ben Affleck was doing Daredevil.
Looks fine.
You just like the poster. She was a spinoff character.
I don't see anything wrong with this movie.
But you're going to need to drink about 20 monsters to get through this one. It is a snooze fest. And I've seen this one, and I don't know if I could be able to sit through it again. At number four, we have, this one is going to be a lot of fun. This is Ghost Rider, Spirit of Vengeance. Nicolas Cage being Nicolas Cage in the sequel. The first Ghost Rider is actually pretty decent as a Marvel movie. And this one is just insanity. They just let him be Nick Cage, and it's one of those. It's one of those over-the-top Nick Cage performances. Doesn't make a lot of sense, and I think it's going to be fun in the group. Number three is going back to the 80s, and if you saw this when you were an 80s kid, it was a very cheese fest movie, but some of us actually enjoyed this movie, even though it's considered one of the worst Marvel movies ever made, and that is Howard the Duck. So that'll be a lot of fun. And then number two, this one came out just a few years ago. This is, of all things, Michael B. Jordan, who just won for Sinners, the best actor, and he was cast in this, some say miscast, as Johnny Storm in Josh Trank's The Fantastic Four with Miles Teller, and it's just not good. It's just not good. It's just awful. It's just awful, and we'll see if it can take down the number one seed overall, which is, again, one of these films that were in the Spider universe. I've seen this, sat all the way through it, and it's grueling. It is a ridiculous film from start to finish, and it's called Madam Web with Dakota Johnson. Just like Jennifer Lawrence in Dark Phoenix, Dakota Johnson was just collecting a paycheck, and she makes it show. We'll talk about it more when we get there to review this, because that's going to be our first matchup. If you look at the bracket here, this is how it lays out. 1 versus 8, 4, 5, 2, 7, and 3, 6. We've got Howard the Duck and Morbius, Kraven and against Fantastic Four. But our first matchup is going to be the X-Men, Dark Phoenix against Madam Web. I hate both of these movies. I really do. I hate them with a passion.
And we'll be choosing which of these is the worst.
The worst. Movie. That's the goal. Okay. Yeah. Which of all these right. stinkers is the absolute bomb? So in 3 weeks, we're going to start a new category, and that is worst Marvel movie ever. Madam Web with Dakota Johnson and X-Men Dark Phoenix with Jennifer Lawrence and company. So that's
when are we doing this?
In about 3 weeks, at about the end of April. I am actually going on vacation to see my granddaughter in North Dakota, so I'm going to be out of pocket for a little bit. So that's, you know, that's just where why we're doing it in 3 weeks.
Yeah, well, that's great. So, you deserve a vacation.
You deserve a vacation. You know, tell your friends that we're doing this category. If they like Marvel and want to make fun of these movies, tell them to tune in to this category. But until then, yeah, I'm going to go enjoy hanging out with my son and daughter-in-law and my grandbaby.
All right, Papier or whatever.
So you asked. Poo-poo. Yeah. So because my wife is from northern Maine and it's close to French Canada, our grandpa and you're close.
Papier.
There you go. Mamère and Papier is what we go by. So yeah, I am Papier. Not by choice. I'm told that's what I am.
Well, I hope you're prepared to have a great trip.
I am. I'm really looking forward to just getting away. And North Dakota is actually not bad this time of year. And I'm just looking forward to spending some time with the family out there and just not having to worry about work or anything else. So that'll be good. So well, thanks
safe travels, my man.
Thank you so much. Thanks to everybody who tuned in. And thanks again to everybody who voted on the Facebook page. Thanks you so much. We'll have another vote up for the first round of the worst Marvel movie ever not long from now. So be sure to tune in. Again, also, you can leave us an email on boxofficebattles@gmail.com and then leave us a suggestion for whatever category you'd like to see us do or just to put in your vote in advance. And don't forget to follow us on YouTube at Box Office Battle Podcast or Twitch at Box Office Battle Pod. So join us in 3 weeks for that. And right now I'm going to turn it over to Eric for his final words of the night.
Thank you guys for sticking with us for this latest category. We had a good time presenting it for you. We'll look forward to the next one. Until next time, there's a lot going on in the world, but you can never go wrong if you'll just be excellent to each other. We'll see you guys next time.
Your winner tonight, this is Spinal Tap. Have a great week, everybody. We'll see you in 3 weeks with the worst Marvel movies. Bye.